into the Sports Round Table, your weekly discussion hub for everything Michigan State from the writers at the State News. Today, we will be discussing none other than Michigan State football. Football is almost back, if you're into the UFL. Today, a little bit different. Today, we're actually going to talk with Jacob Smith, who wrote and covered football during the 2023 football season. And welcome to the show, Jacob.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm really excited. This is your podcast debut.
Right, yes.
Are you excited?
I'm more than excited. You know, I read a podcast for sports when I was in high school, but this is like the real deal. We got the headset on. We got the mics right in front of me. Like, there's nothing better than this. So yeah,
State of the art yeah. Stuff. It isn't really football season. We do have a new college football video game coming out.
Oh yeah.
EA. Which is exciting. Uh-huh. EA Sports College Football 25. Yeah. Are you ready for that?
More than ready. Whatever like more than ready is in the definition, that's what I am. Like, I cannot wait for that game.
I have like a pinned, like I'm not even joking, on my browser. I have pinned to the tabs. I have a search of this video, like College Football 25.
Yeah.
I have a search and I just refresh it every day with like notifications, like to see if there's any new articles or any new news.
There's stuff coming out. I saw some banners going up today where like around the colleges, I think Michigan was one.
No
of them.
Way.
And they're just like, just the small promotions, you know, like just to get the hype excited because this game's been years in the making, but there's nothing better than playing college football in a video game. Like, I can't even wait. I like, can't even fathom how that's going to be. It's just going to be an unreal experience.
And it's going to be crazy because I didn't play Madden. I don't play Madden, I should say.
Yeah, like, a little bit.
That's the thing. Like, it's like, I love football video games, but Madden's kind of like, you know, I don't know. I just don't care about it too much. You know what I used to play when I was a kid? This is just going to be the video game episode. I used to play NFL Street. Did you ever play those games?
I think I'm a little too young for that one.
Oh, my God. The kids these days are missing out. NFL Street. No, it was this game. It was, like, basically street football.
Yeah.
And, like, yeah, I guess you might be a little too young, but, like, if you have, like, an old PS2, play this game. Like, straight up. Because this game would be, like, it'd be, like, this big, like, Joey Harrington for the Lions, like, would be playing, you know, be playing under center. And, like, you would basically, like, you get these, like, power-ups or whatever.
Oh,
they also had an NBA Street video game.
I've heard of that one, yeah.
That one was good. I think that one was more popular. Like, I actually liked that more than NBA Live growing up.
Oh, yeah, NBA Live. Because I grew up on the 2K, NBA 2K.
Oh, okay,
and
yeah.
They have the normal play modes and stuff, but they got the blacktop, which is that kind of that street feel, 5-on-5, 3-on-3, whatever you want to run. And that was like when I was.
It was cool because I think you could like kick the ball at some point. Like that was one of the power ups. Like you could kick the ball into the net or something.
God.
Like I don't even remember. It was just like crazy stuff.
The art of video games.
Yeah. So they should bring those back.
Right. I know. A little special mode or something.
That and like backyard baseball.
Oh, I've heard of that one.
There you go.
Yeah.
So.
Those are the good ones.
Those are the good ones. Anyway, so as you can tell, we have a little bit of a slow week for MSU sports. But I did want to talk about MSU football because MSU football is kind of in a transition for the second time in like 5 years, you'd say, right? Like, so we were transitioning from D'Antonio to Tucker. And D'Antonio didn't have, right, the best of outing. Like, he didn't go out the best, right? His legacy was like, it's good because he took MSU's football program, especially in the modern game, he took it to heights that it never had.
Exactly.
Right? And but then at the end, he wasn't like recruiting or getting the best out of his players. So like it kind of sucked to see those latter seasons that were just not on par with how MSU was at the peak. Right?
Exactly.
So. But then you had Tucker come in, and he seemed like you doing a good job. Then it was like kind of a facade because you weren't sure if it was just because of Walker. But also, I think that in some ways you could argue that like Tucker, you know, you think about who he is as a coach,
exactly.
Right? And I'm going to make my case for Jonathan Smith, I guess, right here is that when Tucker came in, he had a lot of success when he was with Georgia, when he was with Ohio State. He had never really had a head coaching role, but he, when he was, like, you know, at those bigger schools, like, he was like defensive coordinator at OSU or Georgia or these big programs with very, very, very like unlimited recruiting resources. And then you get to MSU where it's like it's not a, a program with a bad or a small name, but people, it's, you got to convince players to come here over like a school like Michigan.
Right.
You know, that's why D'Antonio, I think, did so well is because he like recruited small, but then he coached well. You know, he really got the most or more potential out of his players than he's, I think, sometimes given credit for.
Exactly.
And then so you have Jonathan Smith come in, and he is kind of like that archetype where he's like I was listening to a podcast, and they were arguing that this is before Smith was hired, and they were arguing that Smith should be that MSU's next coach should be a guy like D'Antonio. It shouldn't be D'Antonio because D'Antonio's kind of like past his age,
yeah,
right? But you should have a coach that comes in and is like knows how to do it at a small scale, yeah. Right? Like, and Smith is like that, right? So what, I guess, what are your thoughts on Jonathan Smith and his what he did at Oregon State?
Yeah, I'm glad that you brought up that point with D'Antonio and how he kind of had to bring this program up a little bit. That's kind of what I see in Jonathan Smith, especially with the hire, because that was the talk, like, in the offseason. Like, kind of, we were already looking at him a little bit, like, when the season was finishing up, so we kind of knew the direction we were heading in. And obviously Tucker had come in and kind of established a good, like, a culture, kind of built something that had been, like, established as a foundation from D'Antonio. What I see from Smith is he has that same kind of experience, like I was saying, with D'Antonio. Oregon State was not a good program when he was hired. I think their first season they had one or two wins. Like, they were absolutely nothing. And then Jonathan Smith came in. You know, obviously it's not going to be a one-year turnaround. Like, you have to work up. You got to recruit your guys and stuff like that. But once he started to build a culture there of his own, he built his own culture, and I think that's what's very important. He's proven that he can do that, especially at a program like Oregon State, because they're not known for being a football school. But he took them after the rebuilding seasons. You know, they made bowl appearances this past year. They were very successful. They had people. They had like another bowl season. I think three straight bowl seasons is what he made. So it's just when you kind of realize like that this guy, like, he's here for a while. He's not like somebody that's like trying to prove himself and then, like, you know. Like, it's just that, like, he's here to build a culture, and I think that's what he's going to bring to Michigan State. We've got, like, we were going through a little transitional period. Like you said, like, this kind of season wasn't what we were expecting in this sense. And I think that when you bring in him, a guy like that who's ready to build up that, and he's ready to just, he's going to be there for his guys. You just know that. You can tell by him, and, like, just from how he speaks, how he presents himself. I think that's, like, the most important thing with him is that he's here to build a culture, and that's my initial thoughts on him. Obviously, we got to see him coach. We got to see how he does on the field, but I think this is kind of what he brings to the table, and I think he's, if you're looking for a guy to turn around your program, bring it back to the glory that it had, I think he's the right guy.
Yeah, and I think especially since he did that at Oregon State, right? That, like you said, isn't known for being a powerhouse, and in some ways is smaller than MSU. Mm-hmm. And he sort of brought it to the. Now, I don't know if it's, I would say, the national spotlight, but I like say, you know, it's not hard. I don't think it would be too much of a leap, yeah, to imagine that if Jonathan Smith wasn't hired by MSU and this job opening didn't come about, I don't think it's that far of a stretch to say, like, he could have done way more at Oregon State, right? Right. Like this was not the ceiling at the program. And so it was only on a continuation almost, like, because at its in the several years that he was at Oregon State, he I think, like, last season he had a very successful year. However, like, the games they lost were, like, ranked opponents.
Agreed.
You know, yeah, that's the thing. That's what you see from the, yeah, scorebook, is it's like you won basically every game you were supposed to.
Exactly.
And it was just, I think, taking that actual, like, hump. But at Oregon State, you can imagine the challenges in that. Like, I mean, if you're competing with USC, if you're competing with even UCLA in a good season,
right,
if you're competing with Oregon, Oregon, right? Your rival in state, like, that's very hard because, you know, if somebody's going to Oregon, they're probably going to the University of Oregon. You know what I mean? Exactly. They're not really choosing Oregon State. It's kind of a sort of an afterthought. And then, like, Washington is also very good, and that they were in the conference for, like, the longest time. So I think when he comes to MSU, he'll have, I think, more to do, like, more resources that at his disposal.
Yeah, no, I'm glad that you said that with the resources, because he's proven that he can win those games that he needs to, and I think that it is a matter of taking that next step. And he's going to have plenty of opportunities to do so. I mean, with the Big Ten, it's expanding now, but it's already been a pretty known conference. It's a pretty top-heavy conference for those teams like Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan that are good every single year. So I think that he's going to have that chance to kind of get over that hump with the resources that he's had. And now that he's bringing that experience, he's proven that he can win some of those games. Because I think one of the biggest problems with Michigan State last year, for example, is we didn't win all of our 50-50 games. Like, we were known as a team, like, especially when we had that run in 2021, we were beating the teams we were supposed to, and then a few of our losses were just a little, like, we had a slip up here and there against Purdue in 2021, but stuff like that. We beat the teams that we needed to, and then when the ranked teams came, it was more of that. And then last, like, 2022, and then especially last year in 2023, we haven't seen that. Like, some of those Big Ten games have been toss-ups. So I think that if you give him the tools, Jonathan Smith, if you give him the tools, and that he can build himself up, like we've been saying, and get that roster to where it needs to be to take care of those teams, and then he's going to have plenty more chances to take down some of the bigger dogs in the conference, I think that's going to really help him. And I think that's why this job fits for him a lot better. I mean, his Oregon State fit was great, but I think this is, like, a step up in terms of fit for him.
Yeah, absolutely, especially since Oregon State is not going to be in a conference now. Exactly. I think that sucks, yeah. First of all. Like, I feel so bad, especially with Washington State. I mean, because I kind of have a soft spot for Washington State, you know, like those two programs, Washington State and Oregon State, those are the ones that are left out of the Pac-12, right?
Yeah.
Pac-2.
Yeah, right.
You know,
no,
like, so that's the thing. It's hard to, you know, it's tough. And so, especially since they're not following their in-state counterparts to the Big Ten like that, I don't know. I think that's a real bummer. And yeah, did you want to talk about what's Jonathan Smith doing with the roster, and like, are, how, you know, do you know how, what, which players are staying, and which, like, I guess, what does that look like in the outlook?
Yeah, so the roster, it experienced a little bit of turnover and a little bit of people, like, a lot of new, like, just a lot of new faces, I guess. One of the most notable things that Jonathan Smith said in his introductory press conference back in November was that he thinks Michigan State's a place that you can develop, and he was kind of just excited about, like, what he has to work with here. But we also saw how he brought in some of his guys. So obviously the biggest name that we're going to be seeing in a change this year is at the quarterback position with Aiden Childs. He was the backup to DJ Uiagalelei back at Oregon State, and he was a four-star recruit. So he was Jonathan Smith's best recruit. So bringing him in is obviously, like, the headlining move. That's what everybody's going to be talking about. He also brought in Michigan State added 12 players from the transfer portal in the offseason. A lot of offensive linemen, a lot of defensive linemen, but he brought in three players from Oregon State. He added Jack Vieling, who's a tight end. He's a sophomore at Oregon State. He'll be coming in. And Tanner Miller is an offensive lineman. They're coming in, too. So I think that was the biggest thing, is, like, kind of bringing in some of those other guys that had the experience from Oregon State. Like, they want to play for Jonathan Smith, and they want to develop here. That was, like, a big thing. And the transfer portal, like, that's kind of modern college football now. Like, you need that. You need to utilize that in order to succeed and establish your roster, like, stuff like that. But in terms of people staying, too, like, you had one more comment on the people leaving. All three quarterbacks transferred out as well.
Caden
Hauser, Sam Levitt, and Noah Kim.
Right.
They're all gone. So you needed to address that quarterback position. And, I mean, there's no better person to bring in other than Aiden Childs for that. Like, that, it's his team now. They got the keys. And then they're going to pair some of that with the people that are returning. The defense was very young last year. That is one of the biggest things that was, like, kind of a problem with them. But also, along with the problems, they showed flashes. So they're bringing back Malik Spencer, Dylan Tatum, Chance Rucker's coming back. Like, these guys, and Charles Brantley. These guys were all very young last year in the secondary and in the linebackers positions, and they're coming back, and they're gonna be here to develop. That's the key word, I think, with Smith. And then obviously on the offensive side, you bring back Nate Carter, the running back. He showed lots of flashes, multiple 100-plus yard running games last year. And Montori Foster's another big one that's coming back at the receiver position for his last year of eligibility. So they're mixing guys. They're mixing in that little bring back some guys, but also develop them and then bring in some other guys from the transfer portal and stuff like that. But I think the biggest way to describe how this roster is looking now is a little bit of a turnover. But it's also not in a bad position because of the guys that are coming back.
And then I know you mentioned, you know, obviously all three quarterbacks are transferring out, which kind of sucks, right? Yeah. You know, I mean, I guess it Levitt makes sense, right? Because Levitt is... I guess they all kind of make sense to some degree because Kim, first of all, is the one that makes the most obvious sense.
Yeah.
Because I think that he was going to transfer regardless of which coach came in.
Exactly.
Like, because even if there was no coaching change, I still think, like, even if they came out, like, with Tucker, because I firmly believe that if Tucker saw how Noah Kim was performing on the field, because sometimes you think that a guy might be better when he's in practice,
right.
But then you see him in the actual tangibles on the field, it doesn't add up, right? And that's kind of how I felt like it was, because I believe that Tucker thought that Noah Kim was the best quarterback at the time.
Yeah.
But then you see him develop, and you see him put him out in practice, or not in practice, but in a real game, and you just don't see it. Like, it's just not working.
No, exactly.
And I think that's exactly what happened with Noah Kim. I honestly didn't believe that he was the, I'm not saying I told anyone so. I didn't think that he was the answer anyway.
Yeah. Here's the thing about that. I think the interesting thing is, like, if you were to, I think at different points of the season, I think that answer became more apparent at different times. I think that if you were to ask at the beginning of the season, like, who's the best quarterback on this roster between the three? I think a good portion of the fan base would say Noah Kim because Noah Kim was also waiting for his turn last year in 2022 when Peyton Thorne wasn't really getting it done. And I think that Noah Kim, like, kind of, like, he was the starter through the Iowa game. And then after that, you're like, okay, like, we're kind of seeing, like, this offense is going where they average 15.9 points per game on the season. Like, this is not an offense that was flowing. So you throw in Caden Howard to try, you throw in Sam Levitt to try, and, like, it still wasn't really getting it done.
And the problem is, like, at some point, like, it's like with Howser, at least, like, you're throwing in a young quarterback. Because then, at, you know, with Kim, it's like, if Kim is what, like, a junior last year, you know, a senior?
Yeah, he was a junior.
Or something. Right, right. So if when he was a junior, it's like you've been here for 3 years. You've done, like, all the stuff. You know, like this is probably pretty close to the ceiling.
Yeah.
Like, this is probably you're almost there.
Yeah.
And if you're not performing now, then I don't think that you will.
Yeah, and I think we got the glimpses of that for sure. Like, we saw kind of as much as, like, this offense, like, we were excited about it, and, like, we thought that, okay, Noah Kim might be the answer. It definitely had its limitations, and especially when that running game wasn't going with Nate Carter, and you had to force Noah Kim to throw. That's what teams started to do to us, and that was that we saw. Like, we started to lose some of those closer games. Like, Iowa was a close game. That's the one I'm thinking of because that was his last start. But other games that, like, that were a little bit closer, and even when the offense was stalled against, like, number 8 Washington, we put up 7 points. Like, that he just was not getting it done to move the ball. And then when, like I said, look at the other portions of the offense aren't going, like, Nate Carter in the running game, like, that's where the limitations came in. And I think that's why, like, okay, as much as Noah Kim probably needs a change, I think it's appropriate that Michigan State needs a change too, because we saw that there was obviously disconnections. And I think that's the most important thing about, like, their decisions. It makes sense, but at the same time, it's like, when all three of them go, it's a little bit different.
It does suck, because, like, I guess I get it. You know, like I said, if Kim's already done it, he's not going to want to come back. That's just not – I think you need a fresh start if you're anybody in that situation that he went through. And that, like, I think Kim would also fit. It's just, like, it's really hard. It's, you know, because if you're a Big Ten quarterback, there are big expectations with that. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to have to play against good competition. And, like, with the Big Ten, like, they're one of two of the best conferences in – the country, right? And so, like, you're going to have to play Ohio State. You're going to have to play Michigan. You're going to have to play against really good teams, and you're going to have to perform against them. And I think that that's, like, too much of a high expectation for some people, and they're just not fit to be on a Big Ten roster unless you're playing for Indiana or, you know,
who's
those expectations aren't high to begin with.
Right. No, I agree. And I think the most important thing about that is, like, Michigan State played 4 ranked opponents all inside the top 10 last year. They put up 10 points combined against all 4 of those teams. Like, I think that's just the thing. Like, you need, like, as much as it was nice to have 3 quarterbacks to rotate through and, like, try to throw them in there and see, like, is this going to work at something? That was also kind of a disgrace because Harlan Barnett, the interim head coach last year, he was, like, pick and choose who's going to be the starter for each game. And, like, you can't roll around. You can't roll through your season, especially when you got Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State on your schedule. Those three teams came in the last portion of the season. When you have those teams on your schedule and what's coming up like that, you can't take a gamble and be like, I don't know. Am I going to put Levitt out there today, or am I going to put Caden Hauser out there today? You can't really do that. And I think that's the most important thing about the quarterback changes, even though that all three of them are departing. With Aiden Childs coming in, you have stability. You know he's going to be your starter.
Exactly.
And you know he's going to play all of your games as long as he's healthy. So I think that is what is really, as much as three quarterbacks transferring out and, your room getting a little bit depleted, I think it's a positive note and a step in the right direction with one quarterback who we know is going to be that guy for the season.
And Levitt's hard, too, because, with Hauser, I think he's just too good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's too good to wait behind somebody. Agreed. If you know that the coach's old recruit is coming in, then, you're not going to want to wait for an opportunity, because you know that Childs is already favored to begin with,
right?
And then so with Hauser, that's I guess your issue there. And then your barrier with Levitt is that he was recruited by Smith, and then he didn't get recruited by he didn't get an offer from Smith.
Yeah.
So then there's that, right? So you have some sort of animosity towards. And I think what's funny is I don't think that Levitt would have been so quick to pass judgment if Childs had been a junior or senior, right? If they hadn't been part of the same class,
right.
I think that that's the part of the issue too, is that Childs was literally the quarterback that Levitt had over, that Levitt wasn't picked for, you know what I mean? So you have the other quarterback that's coming in, the quarterback that you literally lost out to. How do you think that Levitt is supposed to think that he will get a fair shot?
No, right.
So it's everybody has their reason, and it sucks for MSU,
right.
But every reason is pretty valid.
No, exactly.
And who did they have gotten an option right at the backup position now?
Levitt's at Arizona State, so I'm not, he will be completely
starting. But
job.
Didn't MSU didn't they recruit a backup?
They got in the portal. They got from North Dakota, Tommy Schuster.
That's what
he's going to probably be the backup. I mean, North Dakota is, I think they're FBS or FCS. I always get them confused.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not the competition level isn't quite what he's acquainted to. But solely for backed up, and they had Andrew Softstar last year. I mean, I think he was a walk on, but just as bodies, you need people in that room and stuff like that. So. I mean, yeah, they got some backups.
So the funny thing is if Childs gets injured, what do you do?
Yeah, it's it gets a little shaky. But, I think it's just the risk you got to take.
I think it's really their only option.
Exactly.
Right? Because, the upside that Childs might have, especially in a room with Smith, is pretty significant.
Yeah.
Whereas, if you don't take that risk, then, you're going to – the person you might get in the portal – otherwise, you might be able to get two guys in the portal and ask them to compete, and that might be an option.
Right.
But at the same time, I don't know. I always find it interesting. I'm wondering if – I wonder if athletes take that into account. If I'm transferring to a school, you'd think that you'd like to know that you're getting a job, right?
Right.
When Peyton Thorne went to Auburn, I was he's got to get the job, right?
Exactly.
Because
why else is he transferring?
Why else would you transfer?
Yeah, and I think that's when you were mentioning with Levitt, he probably didn't know, towards the end of the season, in the middle of the season, when he was, starting to get his snaps, he preserved his redshirt. He redshirted this season. He only played in four games.
Oh, I know.
Preserved it. So he probably didn't know that going into the 2024 season and even into the off season, he probably didn't know that he wasn't guaranteed that. He probably was thinking, all right, this might be my team next year, and, I can build off that. I'm going to preserve my redshirt and prepare for that. But then all of a sudden in modern college football, when the transfer portal exists and then you can start throwing money at guys left and right and Jonathan Smith comes in, you're like, well, maybe I don't want to be here anymore because I believe that I'm good enough to be a starter. I think that's just what people get in their heads, especially these young college athletes who some of them might think they're better than people. Some of them might think.
Oh, I remember. Yeah. I was a very unathletic baseball player, very unathletic.
Yeah.
And I was convinced that I was going to go pro at 13.
I think every kid was, right?
And that's the thing. And these guys, by the way, are way more talented than I ever was.
Right.
But that's the. That's the thing is you want to be selfish for yourself, right? You're never gonna act against your own interest.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what these kids are doing. So I guess I kind of want to move on to MSU's like, what do you prediction? You know, like in terms of, you know, I think that here's the thing, though. I think this comes with an asterisk because I really do think the how important the quarterback position is going to be, especially for this team. I think the quarterback position is huge. And so, like, Aiden Childs is kind of a wild card. So I think that, like, you could honestly say, like, you could give a number and you could be, like, anywhere between this and this many wins.
That's exactly where I was going to go with that question that you were asking me, because I think from an out, like, if from an outsider's perspective, if we didn't go to Michigan State, like, this is one of the most intriguing teams in the country. You do not know what the record's going to be. Like, you can't even almost put in a ballpark. Like, you do not know how the season's going to go. And I think that's what's really interesting, but also can cause some problems. Like, you don't know how to judge it. Like, you don't know when these games are coming up, because they have a challenging schedule. Like, there's no doubt about it. They travel to Oregon and then play Ohio State back-to-back weeks. Like, that is a tough stretch, and that's only the beginning of the tough stretches they got. They still got Michigan on their schedule. They still got Washington coming in from the Big Ten. Like, these teams are on their schedule. So that's more the scheduling part. But when you look at the team, I think it – as much as we talked about quarterbacks already and where it starts from, I think it starts from the offense and Aiden Childs, because that was the biggest concern last year. Like I mentioned, they only put up 15.9 points per game, and that's just horrendous in college football. Like, the team scoring 50, 60-plus sometimes. So you don't want that to be your identity. And I think the biggest thing that I'm going to be watching for, and I think that, like, at home, if you guys are watching Michigan State football this season, I think you want to pay attention to Childs' rushing ability. I think that's the most intriguing thing about him, because that's – not just in college football and modern college football, but if you look in the pros, you need kind of like a dynamic quarterback to have team success. You need somebody that can throw it but also can take off and be agile when you need them to, when the pocket collapses or there's receivers not downfield. So Childs, he's kind of limited last year. Like, he was the backup to DJ Uiagalelei, like I said. Only had 24 completions for 394 touchdowns, but he also had 79 rushing yards and 3 touchdowns. So that's where his strength is, I think, is on the ground. He's also a very good thrower, but I think that's what the season's going to depend on, is, like, how much success are we going to have with that rushing attack? And the Big Ten is notorious for kind of guys that are just more throwers, you know. I know, like, you see, like, a little bit here and there with some guys that can run, like Gavin Wimstad from Rutgers or even J.J. McCarthy last year. Like, those guys are a little bit more hybrid, but I think that they've had success and they've given some of those, like, bottom feeder teams trouble. I know that Gavin Wimstad gave us trouble when we played Rutgers, and that's why we blew a 24-6 lead in that, like, after half. Like, that's just how these guys win. So I think that's what can be the identity and the tale of the season. You can also look at your rushing attack, because Nate Carter is back. He was one of the more dynamic players on the field last year. And when that rushing attack is on, it's on. And the offensive line was good last year. They had some guys leaving, like J.D. Duplain's going to the NFL. But when you bring in these guys from the transfer portal and stuff, the offense, it might have some sparks finally. And I think that's what we were truly missing last year. And that's truly why last year was also kind of like a confusion. Like, you didn't know where it was going to go. But you kind of could tell towards the end of the season when those blowouts started to roll. And you're like, all right, the offense is very, very lackluster. But I think now that you got to, like, this year, there's promise. There's something there. There's a spark. I think that is what's going to make or break Michigan State's identity in 2024.
And I guess last, what do you think MSU fans should look for in the spring showcase?
Okay, April 20th, that's when it's coming up.
A little bit more than a week.
Yeah. I mean, from past experience, just going and stuff, don't expect the full game. Don't expect the sprint. Like, don't expect the scrimmage. Don't expect Aiden Childs and the backups, like, going at it against, like, our own team. Like, Michigan State is known for doing their spring game kind of like an open practice. That's kind of what you should expect. I don't know if Jonathan Smith's going to change that format about under the Mel Tucker days, and since I've been in college, that's what they've done. Jonathan Smith might bring in a game style. We don't know that yet, but I think that you should definitely look for the players that you want to really focus on the field. I mean, Childs is going to be there. Like, these new guys coming in are going to be there, and I think that's what you should look for. But also, don't underestimate that defense. I think that you might not see it as much from the spring practice or anything like that, but if I were to give you some heads up going into next year, like, don't underestimate them. This was a young group last year, and they held their own, especially, like, against somebody like Washington with Roman Dunze and Jalen Lepolk. Like, last year, you got tested. You got, like, the Michigan's receiver, like, Ohio State's, like, Marvin Harrison last year, you had to go against. Like, this group faced some really, really good receivers. I think that this year, now they got some experience under the belt. They were so young last year. We had freshmen and sophomores starting.
That was also
true.
A big
freshmen
thing.
And sophomores starting in that defensive back, like.
Yeah, I don't think the team was as bad as people thought it. No. Like as the record showed, they had a lot of close games that they could have won. Yeah. I think they if Tucker didn't have that scandal, I think they would have went to a bowl game. I think they would have won 8 games, to be honest.
I know it's not even that much of a stretch to say that because you can't underestimate not just Mel Tucker's case, but any coach getting fired or investigated or arrested or anything like that. That is going to screw up a team mentally, physically, that throws everything off, no matter who you are. And all props to Harlan Burnett. I know his record didn't show how much he put in faith and effort into trying to just hold that team to something, to an identity. I can't imagine
the pressure that Barnett was under.
Yeah, I know. It was just a completely horrible situation for him. But at the same time, he was trying his very best, and you see how that works out. So you can't really underestimate that. So I think if you were to just compare this year and last year, maybe don't expect the worst, because this year we have culture, we have something, we have a structure that's being built, and that's the biggest thing. I know last year was disappointing, and that's not Michigan State football, but you just got to look at everything that happened too. We got 4 wins with pretty much the worst possible scenario you can get. So I think that's the kind of biggest thing, just to look at maybe in the spring practice, but also next season, look at that culture, see how the players are acting on the field almost in a way. I kind of pay attention to maybe the smaller stuff, maybe not as much with football, but see how the team's kind of coming together. Are they jumping around together? Are they giving each other hugs, daps, stuff like that? And I think that's what's kind of that'll also kind of make or break next season. Is there a true culture? Can Jonathan Smith bring that here? And can he really get these guys to a family? I think last year we kind of saw a little bit of a divorce almost. It was kind of just an awkward ending between the two parties. So I think that's what I would instruct you guys to look for at home for looking in the next season in the practice.
Epic. So here's the deal. So we are going to move on, cool. First of all. So we're going to move on to trivia.
Oh, yeah.
We love some trivia.
Who doesn't?
I'm actually looking up a rule in the NCAA right now.
Ooh, fact check.
Well, because I want to know, do you remember when college football stopped getting rid of or stopped doing ties? Do they still do ties? They don't do ties anymore, do they?
Definitely not in football. That sounds like some 1900s.
This is definitely not the trivia question.
Okay.
The college football has now established tie-breaking rules.
Yeah.
The last tie in college football occurred. This is some trivia without even getting into the trivia. The last tie was on November 25th, 1995, Oof. Between Wisconsin and Illinois.
Okay.
I was 1 month old.
I wasn't
crazy.
Even close to the womb. So,
so they didn't. Because I don't think that they changed game rules or something. Or I can't actually know. Maybe I'm just looking at the Wikipedia.
It's hard to picture the no college football without overtime. Yeah. That recent too.
So they established actual tie breaking rules, and so I think that because the actual game rules weren't changed, there are no reasons why they are trying to repeal it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So there's no reason.
Yeah.
So. Overtime rules were added to the regular season games to settle ties.
That's great.
So now, now that we know that, there's also something you should know. So the last time that Michigan State and Michigan tied
Ooh.
Was in 1963. Okay. There's another stat for you. How many times has the game ended in a tie?
Between U of M and Michigan.
Between
State.
Michigan and Michigan State. I can tell you this. The number is between 2 and 7. The only reason I'm telling you that is because I wanted it to be multiple choice.
Yeah.
I wanted to have at least 5 options.
You kind of need a ballpark.
So yeah. So it is A 2, B 3, C 4, D 5, E 6, or F 7. You get one guess.
I'm trying to think of it logically, but I don't know. Because as a school, we're founded in 1855, so that's only 100 years span.
Yeah.
True college football didn't really start until much
later. And the last time was in 1963.
Yeah, so I'm going to go. I want to go somewhere in the middle. I'm going to go with C, four times.
Oof, so close. So close. The answer is five.
Man, I knew it was somewhere in the middle. I should have found it.
Isn't that crazy? That's so insane. The last time Michigan State and Michigan tied was in 1963.
Yeah.
And that is pretty much it.
I can't even picture a college football game at the time.
Yeah, it's actually kind of wild. You know what's interesting, though, is, like, I think when Michigan and Michigan State, like, I constantly think about how, like, Michigan State has kind of had the edge in the rivalry if you look since, like, 2013 or so, right? But, like, the funny thing is like, you got to remember that Michigan went through such a huge slide between 2010 and 2015, right? And so because they went through that slide, like, and also Michigan was really good. But what's interesting is I don't think that MSU has won since not being, like, being lower ranked since, so they've done it actually seven times. Yeah. So it was number eight, number six. I don't really, like, know if I count that. They've won seven times, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7
okay.
times as a lower ranked teams because they were unranked in 2017 and 2020 and 2001 and 2009. So those are four times just being unranked.
Wow.
And then in 2011 and 2013, MSU was ranked 23 and 24. And then in 2021, they were number eight, and they beat number six. But that was, like, basically
kind of the
both
same
teams thing, were really good.
Very
but
close.
Anyway, Michigan has only won as a lower-ranked team twice.
Oh, wow.
By the way, 2003 and 2005. At 2005 as an unranked team, by the way, in overtime in East Lansing. I mean, so
that's about as hard as it gets.
That is as hard as it gets.
At least we don't get upset by them as much.
Yeah, not as much. but anyway, so that has been the Sports Roundtable with MSU football. The first time, actually, that I've talked about MSU football on this podcast. Which is crazy because football, it's been so long.
I know, right? We all miss it.
We're almost there.
Yeah.
So this has been Sports Roundtable. If you would like to find out more information about the Sports Roundtable, follow the State News on Twitter @TheSnooze. And we will see you guys again in the next one.
Take care.